Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Comic-Con Stars for July the 13th. It's Dr. John, and we've got a wonderful show planned for everyone tonight. We've been looking forward to this for quite a while. Right now, I will get on with a couple of announcements that we, like we always do. First of all, this weekend is the Raleigh SuperCon, and Papa Stro, you going there?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
That's great. And then, of course, we've got coming up on August the 12th, the Cape Fear Comic Con in Wilmington, North Carolina. And then we've got on October the 1st, the CryptoCon in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Hilton Garden Inn. And, of course, nothing better than the Jacksonville Comic Con on November the 4th in Jacksonville, North Carolina. That's going to be a lot of fun. We will have Papa Stro, Maestro, Dave Atwell, and myself at all three of these events, and it's going to be a good time. We're going to have a wonderful time. Now, first of all, the first order of business tonight, we didn't get to do it last week, but we want to congratulate Papa Stro, Maestro for the second world championship win he has had at UPWA Wrestling, a grand promotion that is located in New Jersey and in Wilmington, North Carolina. Papa Stro, first of all, congratulations on winning the world championship belt and defending it this past weekend. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Anytime you win a championship or any caliber or anything of that nature, it's a big honor, and I'm very humbled to once again be representing UPWA and all the great stars and athletes and fans of the UPWA. And it was a heck of a week last week. Winning the championship on July 4th, Independence Day, at Southport, North Carolina, in front of and meeting Anna Coleman, who was also a former journalist for Fox News, which was really cool. Then getting on set for a couple days, for 48 hours straight, nonstop, and then getting off set that morning, taking power naps through the day, and having a cage match, defending having the first title defense that night in the steel cage against a very, very talented athlete, Michael Mosley. And it was a huge night all around professional wrestling. And also a special thanks to WECT's Gabe Ross for all the exposure and everything. And he actually had a match that night with Daniel Messina, believe it or not. It's been a real crazy week. But I'm really blessed to be once again UPWA World Heavyweight Champion and have the honor of defending that and representing that with pride. So thank you for all the support of me, and thank you everyone out there who, you know, around the world that, you know, stood by me through thick and thin. Really much appreciated, much love.
I tell you what, I spoke with Michael Mosley yesterday. I know him. He's from the Myrtle Beach area from time to time. And he said, I hate that I lost, but Stro really took it to me. So even he knows you're a worthy UPWA World Heavyweight Champion. We're proud of you. We're proud to have you here on Comic-Con Stars, and you're doing some great things in the acting world. And so, anyway, congratulations and best wishes on a long, long reign as the world champion of UPWA. So
sir,
congratulations on that. That's exactly right. Now,
thank you so much.
You are welcome. We want to move on now. Again, congrats to Papa Stro Maestro. And now we got a very special guest. She was introduced to me by a very good friend, Alan Braswell. Alan, you're with us tonight, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Down there in Swainsboro, Georgia, where it's hot as a pistol, and we know that. But thanks for being on here with us. Thanks for being a good friend. You have introduced Comic-Con Stars to a number of people, including a couple of weeks ago, Darnell Boone, the great boxer. And you've been on here talking about your childhood friend, the Houdini of Georgia, Kenny Paul Putnam. We found that extremely interesting. And now you have introduced us to, and we have a wonderful and charming guest tonight. I want to welcome Miss Kathleen Wood Towner to Comic-Con Stars. Miss Kathleen, good evening, and thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's a wonderful opportunity. I'm really looking forward to it. And
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah, you
That's
and Alan
okay.
have been friends,
just,
haven't you?
Yeah, for about 6 years. And that's how it all came to be and led me here and on the phone with you.
That's right. Yeah, we first spoke last week, and Alan had asked you if you would like to be on our show, and we're certainly glad you did. I think many people are interested in what you've got to say because you have truly one of the most famous fathers in the world. Everyone pretty much that I know in the entertainment business knows who Edward D. Wood Jr. is. They know he was a filmmaker, he was a producer, director, writer. As one person called him, he was a true Hollywood original. He brought a great star back who had been overlooked a little bit, Bela Lugosi. He starred Bela Lugosi in his films, and we all love to watch things, including my favorite film, which is Plan 9 from Outer Space. Now, I had asked you to come on and just tell some stories about your dad, because you were fortunate enough to spend time with the great Edward D. Wood. And the last thing I'll say before I let you just start talking is this. I figure anytime Tim Burton makes a movie about someone, Johnny Depp stars as that person, and two Academy Awards are won for that film, that person is important. They're extremely important to our lives, to pop culture and everything. So, Miss Kathleen, tell us about your dad.
Well, to let you know, I met my dad when I was a junior in high school. I was 17 years old. I didn't know him from birth. I got to spend a summer with him when he lived in Pickwick. I don't know if you're familiar with that area near Griffith Park in Los Angeles. But Edward showed up at my high school. And I was called to the office by the principal. And he said, "Your father is here to see you." And I thought, well, gee, that's kind of strange. Why would my dad be here to see me? He goes, "No, your real father." And I said, "Well, who's my real father?" And I didn't want to see him at that time at the school because I didn't know if it was a stranger off the street or who this man was. So I reneged on it and said, "You know, I need to talk to my aunt who raised me before I meet him." So I opted out on that particular day and went home after school and ran into the house, and my aunt said, "I need to sit you down and have a talk with you." And I said, "Who's this man that came to my school and said he was my father, Ed Wood?" And she said, "Well, let me tell you something. Your grandmother found a postcard in a trunk, and it had the address of Ed's parents in Poughkeepsie, New York. My grandmother wrote them a letter and said that Ed Wood had a granddaughter, or had a daughter. They had a granddaughter." And so what initially happened was we contacted Ed, and he wanted me to come stay with him for the summer of 63. So he had a Buick, a convertible that he loved, and he came to see me. He had a bouquet of flowers, an Angora sweater, and he brought me a beautiful gown from Chinatown. It was kind of an off-white color, and then were the gifts that he brought to me. And also, his mom and dad, my grandparents, sent me a watch for my birthday from New York.
And this was all... Is that when they showed you the birth certificate?
You know what? They did not show me that birth certificate until my uncle passed away. It was in a lockbox.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, it was in a lockbox the whole time, and he kept it. It was hidden from me. I never knew who my real father was.
Oh, wow.
And right. I went by a totally different name. And this was a total shock to me to have this experience. I mean, I was never told And it was because of my grandmother who sent that card, that postcard. I had found it, and that's when I went to stay with my dad down off Western Avenue in Pickwick, and he lived in adobe house with Kathy Wood, my stepmother. Mm-hmm. And we would sit up at night and watch old movies. They both liked to drink a lot. I think liquor was kind of their main diet. very much so. But he was the sweetest man. He was so much fun. And I was kind of shy, and I went to church a lot. During that time, I was attending the Jehovah's Witnesses. So this mm-hmm. was quite different for me. I was kind of naive about a lot of things. Okay? So when he would tell me things, I was like, okay. You know, he told me that Tab Hunter and Rock Hudson were gay. And I almost didn't want to believe it, you know? Because back then you didn't talk about that stuff that much. It was kind of mm-hmm. like a... He was a man ahead of his time, I definitely would say that. And he lived things the way they are now, but how many years ago? And people are more open to what's going on in the world now than they were mm-hmm. back then. Everything was hidden back then. He gave me a beautiful photo that he signed to me, said, "To Kathy, my daughter, with all my love, Dad." And that was July 18th. 1963, and it shows him in the director chair with Griswold, and the cameraman was William C. Thompson, and it was from Plan 9 of Outer Space, and he gave me that, and he gave me another photo that I wish you could see it. It's kind of reminds me of an Alfred Hitchcock, because he's sitting on a chair that's leaning sideways and the couch is on the floor kind of upside down and the fireplace mm-hmm. is leaning sideways. But the experience I had with him that summer is what's important, too. He was such a fun-loving person, and he took me to the studios, and he introduced me to the director of Bonanza, and we got to watch the filming of part of it, and we saw the Munsters, and Mr. Ed, and we saw Michael Landon when he was performing. Wow. And when they say quiet on the set, they mean it. I mean, you could hear a pin drop. It was a wonderful experience to experience this. And he would tell me things about the movie industry, and he took me to the hangar where all the costumes are for Gone with the Wind. And Some Like It Hot, and they used to rent those costumes out, and that thing was so huge. We got to walk inside, and I got to look at all these famous costumes from way back when, from 1933 even.
Oh, wow.
And he took me to Griffith's Park during the day. We would drive around in the convertible, and they would make catalog shoes for Sears and Roebuck and J.C. Penney, and there'd be models mm-hmm. all over the grass, and they'd be modeling underwear and clothes to go in the catalogs back then. And he just kind of opened me up to a lot of things that he enjoyed. But you know what? He never really discussed his filming or directing to me. It's like he wanted to spend good time with me. You know, I learned a lot about my dad, more so from the book, which I'm in, that Rudolph Gray did, Nightmare of Ecstasy. And I never did get real close to Kathy. She was very distant toward me. The short time I was there, it was really different because I don't think they had no hot running water. You didn't pay a gas bill. They had electric, but they had no gas. So they would cook on a hot plate. So everything we ate that was warm would be on a hot plate. And the way my dad dressed, he would wear like floppy slippers. He loved wearing slippers. And he didn't wear his Angora sweater when I was there, but he did wear very flowy long pants in black. And he was very good looking. And he was a lot of fun to be with. He seemed to always try to make you happy no matter what. And he'd go with the flow. And I think that's why people liked him so much. He was just himself.
But didn't you tell me, Miss Kathleen, that they seemed to really respect him on the lots?
Oh, yeah, totally. When we would go to the lot, I think it was Paramount, everyone's, hey, Ed, don't worry, things will get better. You're going through tough times right now. Because things were changing so much. We had the Munsters and the Addams Family, you know, films like that were turning around. And you're always going to like those types of films. I do. I mean, I went to San Francisco and saw Uncle Charlie's place, Crossdressers, and we had a great time. You know, it wasn't with my dad, but I did go with my daughter and my daughter-in-law. And so you learn to enjoy the things in life that are fun. And he always was respected very highly by everyone that we met at the studios. Everyone talked to him. Everyone knew who he was. And it was a really good feeling to feel like you're at home. And that's how he felt. When he would go into the studios, he felt like he was at home. And you could see that in his face and the way he would talk. And everyone treated him really well.
You know, Kathy, when you talk about how well they treated him, that tells what they thought about his films. And at that point, his major films were Glenn or Glenda, Jailbait, Bride of the Monster, Plan 9, The Wild Ears, Night of the Ghouls, The Sinister Arms, and Orgy of the Dead.
And, you know, it's interesting how the Medley Brothers took what he did, Plan 9 from Outer Space, and, you know, I talked with Harry a bit about this. They kind of profiteered a little bit on their books about, you know, it being, you know, that being Plan 9 being the worst film of all time, when it really wasn't. And then I think I've talked to a number of directors, and they all said, you know, when you have a low-budget film, that shows the character of the director. In other words, what were they able to do? Because, he didn't have a lot of money. He was always looking for investors. And I think that lets us know that the film community in Hollywood really, really, really respected what he did. Don't you agree, Kathy?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I can see that. And I think it made a lot of his personality, too, that came out of him. Because he was so down to earth and he didn't let anything bother him. He just went with it. And he always tried to make it work right. And he did. I mean, to take and make gravestones out of cardboard and use a shower curtain for a spaceship, you know, it's unheard of. Now we have computers and everything's generated, you know. But to do it the way he did it and use paper plates for flying saucers, why not? You know, and he just knew how to go with it. And I just think it's so wonderful to have been able to experience, to be around him and see the type of man that he was. And I really enjoyed his company and the time that I was able to spend with him. And it was just a wonderful experience in my life. It's too bad I didn't get to enjoy it earlier, you know, growing up. But that's the way things go.
It is. And then you think about it, this is 2017, and Ed Wood is a name that so many people know. If you look at all the thousands of producers, directors, and writers from the late 50s and early 60s, how many of them have the name that Ed Wood does? How many of them had Tim Burton make a film about? Not many. And I think that's a real testament to how good he really was and how creative he was. I haven't said this to people, but I'm glad I got to say it to you. And I'm glad you agree. I mean, you corroborated everything that I just said, that people really did respect him. Now, out of curiosity, which film or films do you really like? of your dad's, and why? You can pick one or two or how many
to
ever.
To be honest with you, the only film I have, the whole collection, I'm afraid to open it because it's a keepsake. You know, I haven't opened it.
Mm-hmm.
And Plan 9 from Outer Space, even though it was the worst film ever made, I got to tell you this little story. In Lancaster, we went to go see it at the movie theater, and I was with my husband and his mother, and we went to the movie theater to watch it, and there were only four of us in the whole theater, four people. And
mm-hmm.
my husband's mother thought that Johnny Depp was my father. She was in her 80s. And I said, "That's my dad, Ed Wood." And she goes, "Oh, he's so good looking." Well, he was anyway. But she said, "That's your father?" And I was like, "Well, he's the actor." "Oh," she said, that she really thought Johnny Depp was my father. I thought that was pretty funny. But, yeah, Plan 9 from Outer Space. I haven't really watched any of the other ones that he did. My daughter, Jennifer, she is totally into this stuff, and she's probably seen all of them. And I think it's something, when you get into a film, that's a personal thing. And I watch films mm-hmm. that I really, I mean, even though my dad did them, everyone has their favorite book and their favorite film. And I did see Plan 9 from Outer Space, but I haven't seen the others, and I probably need to. I'm not getting any younger, and I should, you know, watch them and see what they are about. And but to be honest, with you, Plan 9 is the only one I ever watched.
Well, I'll tell you what, I will make this offer. When you have a chance to sit down and watch several of them, and you say, "Jennifer, your daughter, who I've been fortunate enough to speak with, thank you, Alan, for that, I'd love to have you and Jennifer back, and let's talk about some of your favorite films once you get a chance to watch them." I think, Kathleen, would that be a fun thing to do?
Oh, I think it would be fun, sure. And why not? I think it'd make a good conversation and let people know how we feel about what he had accomplished in those films. And, you know, he had a very rough time, too, a downtime. When he moved out of Pickwick area that was near the horse stables, he lived in that adobe house on Western Avenue. I went there to try to find him years later in the 70s, about 1974. And he had moved, and when I got to the neighbors that were there, they said, you know, he left here about a year or so ago, and they didn't know where he went. So what I did was I sent a letter to the Screen Actors Guild. I called them, actually, and I said, "I'm trying to find my father, Ed Wood." And they said, "Well, we can't give you his physical address, but they said if you would forward the letters to us, we will go ahead and forward it to him." So that's what I did. So I would send the letter to the Screen Actors Guild, and then they were returned to me unopened. So I don't know if Kathy got a hold of them. She just didn't believe that I should be in his life. And I did try to contact him. I tried to contact Tim Burton, because I wanted to know about what was going on with the filming with Johnny Depp and Sarah Jessica Parker and Ed Murray and everybody, and feeling I should be a part of that, but no one ever contacted me. That kind of broke my heart in a way. But knowing Kathy was on the set as the consulate, I could understand it, because some people can be very difficult. So there was kind of a clash there, unfortunately.
Well, you explained it to me, I think, I believe in a very good way, that you think she just didn't want to share him with anybody because she didn't have anybody else.
That's right. Yeah, I think and so. That, I tried to look at it in that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. She was jealous, and she didn't want anybody else spending time with him.
I totally agree. She was with him his whole life, so I can understand that very much so. And then all of a sudden his daughter pops up, you know. That would be very difficult and very hard to manage and deal with. And they both had a lot in common in their lives, and she stuck by him through thick and thin. And I respect that totally.
I mean, anybody that wants to say Plan 9 is the worst movie of all time has obviously never seen Santa Claus and the Ice Cream Bunny. Nobody needs to watch that.
How about
Alan,
Jack Ross?
Alan,
you
may have unearthed something incredible there. Lord.
Well, Real Facts done it. It was the same people that done Mystery Science Theater that done some of Ed's movies. And they done Real Facts on this movie called Santa Claus and the Ice Cream Bunny. And I tell you, with them riffing the movie, it's still hard with the jokes. It's still hard to make it through that movie. I mean, Santa Claus stands up and he's got a stain in the middle of his pants. I mean, it's just not a very good movie.
It was horrible.
Oh God! Did you see it?
I did.
I did.
And it was actually.
Is that the one
made,
and only Greg Bo
Watson? Yes, the one and only. Hey everybody, how you doing?
How's it going? Hey.
Good.
Yeah. So do we have any fans of Santa Claus and the Ice Cream Bunny?
Well, I'm certainly not one. but it was.
Boy, that's it from
was,
the start. Wow.
I'm telling you, it was. Apparently, it was made for some like little. What do you call them? Like kind of like Disney before Disneyland and before Disney.
Yeah,
World
it was
a amusement.
Yeah. Yeah,
for
it
Pirates Land
part.
Or Pirates World.
Right.
Oh, it was terrible.
Oh yeah, it was bad. I mean, that's why when people say that, it's like you've never seen Santa Claus and the Ice Cream Bunny. I always think of that.
That is funny, Alan.
I mean, it's really terrible. So, I mean, Ed Wood's movies looks like Citizen Kane up next to Santa Claus and the Ice Cream Bunny.
But I'll tell you what, Martin Landau, he deserved that Oscar, though. Wrestling with that octopus. I thought he was Bela Lugosi, I swear. I couldn't get over it. It just really mesmerized me. That was one of the best performances I have ever seen, and I love movies. And he was amazing, Martin Landau. And I can see why he won the Oscar. It was fabulous.
It was a fantastic performance.
Yes.
He would have won that any year it came out, for sure.
Yeah, I think they won for makeup also.
That's correct. Those were the two Oscars. Yep. And
makeup.
It was nominated for like 24 awards, you know, several Golden Globes, Academy Awards, but Martin Landau really took the cake as Bela Lugosi, and I think the Lugosi family should be proud of the representation, regardless of what they think. That's kind of up in the air.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You couldn't tell him apart. I mean, he looked so much like him, you would have swore, like Johnny Depp, that he was Bela Lugosi and that Johnny Depp was Ed Wood. You know, there you go.
Well, Miss Kathleen, did Johnny Depp act like your father? Is that the way your father act?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Okay.
Johnny Depp was perfect for that part.
Out of 6 years, I don't think I've ever asked you that question.
No, you haven't, Alan, and that's a good question. I just wish my dad would have made as much money as Johnny Depp. That would have been nice. But why is it they're always famous after they're gone, you know?
Right, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. So other people make money off of them. And here's the talented Ed Wood, and he dies in total poverty. And that in itself is so sad to see that. But maybe now he can smile and look down on us and think, yeah, I knew I was right all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because, yeah, I mean, look at Glenn or Glenda and this Caitlyn Jenner stuff. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're hailing Caitlyn Jenner as a savior of some type, and Ed Wood was doing it back in the 50s.
He was definitely ahead of his time.
Oh, way ahead. Too far ahead, probably, because a lot of people didn't like Glenn or Glenda because it brought up that subject matter.
Right.
And
right.
Now all of a sudden, you know, it was taboo back then. Now all of a sudden, it's all the rage. The transgender, stuff like that.
Do any of you remember the talk show, The Joe Pyne Show? Does anyone remember that?
No.
Yes or
no?
You'd have to remember.
I don't, remember that one.
Joe Pyne was on in the mid-60s, and he had two lesbians on his show. And that was it was broadcast. My parents told me it was broadcast, like, you know, at midnight on Channel 13 in Asheville. And when he had those two lesbians on there discussing their relationship, Joe Pyne disappeared. Nobody would carry his show. And today, you know, he would have been looked upon as so progressive and everything. I mean, and then you look at the great authors from San Francisco and all the really great work that they're credited with. And I think
Ed was truly ahead of his time.
Yes, Greg Bowe, you're right. If we don't have someone interesting on there, nobody wants to listen to it. Kathleen, you're right. He was ahead of his time, and I think all of us truly agree that he was, and we appreciate what he did because of that. That's why that's one of the things we like about Ed Wood. We really do.
Yeah,
now,
and I like to see things live because I go to San Francisco quite a bit, and I like Beach Blanket Babylon. Have you ever heard of that?
What was his name again? Sorry.
Beach Blanket Babylon. It's been running on California Street, San Francisco, for 33 years.
Wow.
And they do a lot of cross-dressers, shows that touch on President Nixon or smoking. It always has a theme every year. And they're fabulous actors. And they, you know, they dress their cross-dressers, and some of them are soap opera actors. But this show is really amazing. And
are they the ones that inspired to make the film Tu Wan Fu with Patrick Swayze?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. All right.
And then The Birdcage, too, that was always one of my favorites.
Yeah, that
Okay.
Rob Williams.
That was
hilarious. That was a good movie.
Look, they're doing the leapfrog.
Yeah, I think after my dad timing. That way, yeah. As far as movies, I love to watch movies. I'm a movie buff. I'll watch one movie 100 times. I saw The Karate Kid 100 times. Okay, something about it I like. I don't know why.
I was there with you. Love that movie.
Me too.
And, you know, it's just Dad and I, when I stayed with him that summer, we would sit up late at night and we'd watch old movies like Gaslight and Love Letters with Joseph Cotten. I know I'm dating myself, but now Voyager with Bette Davis, you know.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant films. And we watched, it wasn't just horror films, it was all films. He just loved watching movies. And I know I take after him with that because I'll watch a movie before I'll listen to music.
Yeah,
that's
I've often wondered how people can't be a movie buff at all. You know, I just, how do you walk around a good film? You know what I mean? There are movies out there that, let's face it, you cry at the credits because you're thinking, man, I'm never going to get these 2.5 hours back. But there are some films out there, and the first one that always comes to mind is The Godfather. Probably my favorite film. And again, I use the term film and not movie or flick because it was a film. And when you watch that, you pick up something different every time you watch it. And everybody in that film was hitting on all cylinders. And, I mean, what a fantastic thing to watch. And when you, you quote it, you think about Brando petting the cat while he's talking and everything. And it's those little things that went into filmmaking that just made those so much more ahead than everything else. So anybody who's never seen The Godfather or Gone with the Wind or even the Ten Commandments, for crying out loud, you're kind of robbing yourself of some culture and some actual experience, you know?
Oh, I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wizard of Oz or the old 1930s Universal horror movies.
Oh, easy. Easy, yeah. Now, I will say this, Wizard of Oz, I had not seen, here's a confession, I had not seen The Wizard of Oz all the way through my entire life. Never seen it.
Wow.
And I'd seen,
wow.
Yeah, I had seen bits and pieces and everything. And so,
you're from Mars.
You know, I'm Chris Stewart. Yeah, I know it. I live shelter. I was too busy watching The Godfather. My bad, you know.
It's okay.
But I found The Wizard of Oz sitting in the old $5 bin. So I says, you know what? Let's watch this. So I came home, and of course, I watched it when my wife was at work and my son was at school, so that way I can actually watch it and hear it. And I got about halfway through it, and I'm staring at the walls going, okay, maybe I just should have watched this when I was 8, because at 47, it is just not going anywhere with me right now. And it's unfortunate because I feel like maybe I lost the magic. You know what I mean? I feel like I lost the opportunity to take it in. And again, the word magic, you know, when I was younger and my mind was kind of going and I wasn't so cynical and all that kind of stuff. I kind of regret the fact now that I never watched it younger, or at least watched it all the way through. But I'm here to tell you, it was absolutely all I could do to get to the credits of that movie. And I feel bad. I feel awful.
Well, I'm just opposite. I love The Wizard of Oz, but yet I've never seen The Godfather.
Really?
Oh, wow.
No, I've had people just fall on their heads almost whenever I say that. Like, just
holy
never
smokes.
Interested me. That Art Citizen Kane. There's a lot of those great movies that they claim is great that I've just never seen. Just never
got to about, got around to watching it. Yep.
You're talking about films being way ahead of their time. Ms. Kathleen, you know, as talked about with Ed Wood, with his creativity, with Wizard of Oz. What really struck me, I mean, just like you guys, like the little things that make theater what it is. And like the whole enactment in the beginning of the Twister coming, you know, Dorothy in her home and then all that. I mean, the visual, I mean, even back then, it was amazing. I mean, considering, you know, technology of that time. So, I mean, even a film like that was just way ahead. It's amazing, way ahead of its time.
Well, you know what's amazing, too, is they when they did Ed Wood, they originally were going to do it in color, okay? and Disney had it. And then they said no. They didn't want it in color. They wanted it in black and white or when they did it. And so they switched production companies. And
yeah, didn't they do that in 16 millimeter? I think they did, didn't they?
I think so. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was very expensive. They had to get a special camera for that and everything.
Wow.
And,
but the thing you've got to appreciate about those movies, though, when you watch them, now, I mean, let's just, we'll use the Lollipop Kid when, okay, here I go again. Dorothy, thanks, guys, quit laughing. Dorothy comes out. I'm okay.
My dog's going
to
love
right,
this when, in the replay.
I'm going to catch all kinds of slack out over this. But when Dorothy
I have a dog
comes
Dorothy,
out
by the way.
There was no green screens back then. There was no CGI. There was no pyrotechnics. There was just nothing but a bunch of people on set. And even if you don't like the film, like me, I was trying to get through it, I couldn't help but respect the amount of work and undertaking it would have taken to organize all those people and having all of them sing on key. And having, you know, when they're doing the acrobatics and the, you know, the Maxwell House lady flying around on her broom and everything, having
Maxwell House.
That,
good to the last
Yeah, there I go again. Yeah. But how they were able to manage to get all that to happen just right. You know what I mean? When you've got two people and somebody flubs their lines, that's one thing. But when you've got 100 people on set and you don't have all of the equipment that we have today and digital and everything. They were rolling film, you know.
Imagine this, like just like you said, you know, they didn't have access to all that stuff. And what blows my mind is when they went from, you know, sepia tone now, but, you know, black and white into color in the Land of Oz to talk about this, you know, to show dreary Kansas. I mean, that was pure storytelling. Dreary Kansas
right.
versus the colorful, magical Land of Oz. But when they had Dorothy, they were filming going through that door out in the Munchkin Land. You know, everything on the inside of the house is still black and white. The back of her dress, if you notice at the time, is black and white while she's in the house. And
yeah.
they had painted the inside of the set to be black and white on screen. And then
mm-hmm.
she had a specific dress that had to match that gingham pattern and everything else that was pure black and white when they filmed that, because there was no way to put, you know, nowadays we'd just go, that's what amazes me so much about Ed Wood's films and what he did on the budget he had, because now we take for granted that we can just go in with a computer and put a filter on something. Back then you couldn't do that.
I've always wondered for years, watching Wizard of Oz, how in the heck did it get the Good Witch in that bubble to be floating around all the way over Oz like she did?
She lost a lot of weight, man. There was
during that time that was just blew my mind. I've always wondered how they did that with the special effects.
A lot
of
bubble gum.
Yeah. Even Technicolor. Yeah, look at Technicolor and Gone with the Wind and the Ten Commandments and all the films back then. We don't use it today. We don't use Technicolor anymore. And everything was so vivid and bright, and it's all changing. And it's always going to change. But what Ed did was amazing to say, that's a wrap, that's a take, you know. You do one little scene and that's it. It's perfect. Don't have to do it again. Now, how many times do they have to redo their lines or redo a take? And it takes time, effort to get it right. And yet, look how it is.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It amazes me what he did with the budget he had or the budget he didn't have, rather. And I was teaching a class a few weeks back on comic book art and comic book storytelling, and I actually brought your dad up and was talking about it, using an example about good storytelling in comics and how back in the day when you didn't have all these massive budgets and special effects, and that the stories were so much better and the movies were so much more memorable when it was less about the big bangs and the big explosions and, you know, more about the story itself.
I agree there, too. It leaves a lot. You know, I've always thought imagination has to work into the puzzle, because even
right.
reading a book, you have to use your imagination. I read Alien,
right,
and I loved the book. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the movie, I was kind of disappointed in a way, because in my imagination, I imagined that Alien totally different from the way I read it in the book, from the way it was made in the film. And it's always been one of my favorite films, too, Aliens. I thought it was a great film. And imagination is what Ed used.
That's what I thought.
Ironically, Dorothy
Potter,
loves
I read the
Aliens.
Books before the movies.
Ironically, Dorothy loves Aliens. She's a big
Is
Alien
she?
Fan. I took her to see the new Alien movie that was out not too long ago, and she had a blast. I took pictures and everything in the theater watching it. It was great.
Miss Kathleen, I have to tell you about Dorothy. Dorothy is Papa Stroh's mascot. She is a Papa Stroh. Just please describe Dorothy to Miss Kathleen, okay?
Dorothy is a very unique young lady. She's very, what's the word? I can't quite put her in words, actually, but she's always the life of the party, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
She's scared a few veteran wrestlers, too, hasn't she?
Oh, along with a few artists, and a few Comic-Cons, and a few authors, and cosplayers.
Be careful. My daughter was Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz in her school play.
Oh.
Well, Dorothy, actually, I named her Dorothy after The Wizard of Oz, actually.
Did you really?
Exactly. Yeah. Inspired me to name her Dorothy, and she's held true to her namesake ever since.
Whenever I'm doing a show with you, you never have to worry about somebody walking off with Dorothy, because I've got my eyes on her the entire time I'm sitting there.
Oh, Miss Kathleen, I got to tell you the story. I got to tell you the story real quick. We're sitting at a Carolina Ale restaurant, steakhouse restaurant, right? And I'm sitting here with some of the Comic-Con people, right, having dinner, and the service was let's just say less than desirable. So I figured, why not? I had Dorothy in the bag, so I took Dorothy out, sat her in the table behind us. And the whole time, you know, waitresses are bumping to each other, and cooks are looking at her and just freaking out, and which I don't know why. But one of the vendors, was looking at Dorothy, and all of a sudden he's freaking out, saying, you know, she's coming for me, right? And no sooner he said that, Dorothy falls off the chair she was on with her arms stretched out, right?
I love it.
And he was so scared, he pressed his face and hands against the window, kind of like that one movie where the guy saw a tarantula and freaked out and was, like, pressed his face against the window screaming for help, because he had a phobia for, you know, arachnophobia, right? And, I mean, we're all just, like, dying laughing.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah. Dorothy's the character.
Causing mischief wherever you go, Stroh.
Oh, yeah, she made friends with Annabelle from The Conjuring. I don't even seen that movie yet.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah. I took her to see Annabelle, and they've been, like, BFFs ever since. I got a picture with her and everything. And those two together is just... Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Tremendous.
Yeah, they're doing a new Annabelle movie, too, by the way.
So Miss Kathleen, we're going to send you a picture of Papa Stroh and Dorothy, and you'll see exactly what we're talking about, okay?
I think I'm getting the picture right now.
Yeah.
Oh,
we'll
good.
See that.
You won't sleep for weeks.
Yeah. But
I know you guys are into this Comic-Con stuff, so I can understand that. I mean, Teddy, Alan's son, he does such a beautiful job with that stuff. It's amazing.
Yes, he does.
What he can do at such a young age. And
mm-hmm.
he kind of reminds me of Ed Wood in a way.
Wow.
Alan's son.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Alan, you better tell him that, Alan.
Oh yeah,
wow.
I will.
Good. Now, Miss Kathleen, you told me that you had a couple of stories you wanted to tell us, and one that I really want everyone to hear is a little bit about, it was the Nancy Sinatra story. Now, we all know who Nancy is. That's Frank's daughter. So remind us of that story. That was a cool thing.
Yeah. I used to go to spring break in Palm Springs every summer with my girlfriends, and I met this guy, an actor from Beach Blanket Bingo with Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon. And
okay.
I kind of hooked
yeah.
up with him in Palm Springs. He used to work at Henshey's Department Store, which was like a Saks Fifth Avenue in Santa Monica. And we got to going out on spring break, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to Nancy Sinatra's 21st birthday party." He said, "Do you want to go?" And I said, "Really?" He said, "Why don't you come with me? We'll have a great time." And I said, "Well, I can't. I'm not 21. Because they had someone at the door checking ID, and I didn't have a fake ID. So he went ahead and went, but at least I had that experience. I got asked to go. And that in itself was pretty amazing, but to tell you, I met her ex-husband, Tommy Sands. My girlfriend and I used to go down to Hollywood because she had to see a foot doctor down there, and she was a gorgeous gal. She came in second to Miss California, and we were driving down Santa Monica Boulevard, and Tommy Sands pulled us over in her old sports car, and he said, "Hey, gal, you want to come with me to this nightclub?" And we thought, well, we can't get in. We're only 18, 17 years old. He said, "Don't you worry about it. I'll get you in." And so he did. He drove into the parking lot, parked the car, and he got us through the front door and got us into that nightclub. Back then, you could do those things and get away with it. I don't know about
nowadays,
today,
you end up on a registry. Yeah.
But,
oh,
I'll tell you what,
yes.
I've had some good experiences. I even got to meet Muddy Waters.
Oh, Muddy Waters.
Tell us about that. Yeah.
I spent the whole night jamming with Muddy Waters. And
wow, how cool is that?
I was 19. I was out of high school. I was a beauty school dropout. Trying to be a hairdresser, okay? Going to beauty school. And the guy I was dating at the time had a friend in Fillmore. And he called him up and he said, "Hey, why don't you and Kathy come down to Fillmore? We're going to have Muddy Waters. He's a friend of mine. He's going to come to my house. And you guys are invited." So we hopped in his van, panel truck, and we drove down to Fillmore. We got there at 7 o'clock at night. And went into the house and up pulls this old beat-up station wagon. And out comes Muddy Waters and his whole entourage. We all went into the house, and there were about six of us sitting in the living room. And he jammed and played jazz from 7 o'clock at night, and I had to be back to Lancaster by 7 in the morning because I was going to Santa Monica. And so we jammed all night. And listen to him play all night. They didn't stop.
Wow.
I mean, they stopped long enough to take a drink and use the bathroom. And you know, it was amazing that I got to experience that in my life. So
that's awesome.
I had a lot of amazing
man,
things
cool.
happen. You know,
part of living in Southern California, right?
Yeah, and Jennifer, too, when they were filming that movie about my dad,
mm-hmm.
his granddaughter, she was living down there during the time that they were filming it, going to college, and they had the set all marked off, and she walked up to one of the men there by the ropes or whatever they use, and said, "Yeah, I'm Edward's granddaughter." And he goes, "Yeah, sure you are."
Wow.
You know, just. And
that
she
stinks.
Really was.
Oh,
and
man.
So she had that experience. So, and she's met a lot of actors since she's lived down there, too, and had a lot of good experiences. And she wanted to see this movie one time at Virgin Mega Records Center, where they have, she used to work there as assistant manager, and that's where she met Tim Burton. And she met Tim Burton and said, "My mom's really pissed off at you." And he goes, "Well, who's your mom?" And she says, "Edward's daughter, Kathleen. And he said, "Oh, I feel really bad." And he was there for a book signing. So he told Jennifer, he said, "Well, if Kathy will mail me her book, Nightmare Before Ecstasy," he said, "I'll have all the actors sign it." And, but I think my stepmother, she would have freaked out if I would have shown up there. And that was so hard for me to go through that because I really wanted to be there during that filming. But so things have happened in our life that are very interesting and very fascinating. That what's the odds of her meeting, seeing the film being made, and then meeting Tim Burton personally and talking to him? No.
Well, Miss Kathleen, tell the story about Kenny Duncan.
Oh yeah. Dad took me to see a couple of the actors that I met. Kenny Duncan, and he took me to his house, and he lived in one of those old kind of Spanish-looking, I guess a lot of them looked like that back then. I never laughed so hard in my life. I walked into that living room, and here on the walls were photos of Kenny Duncan. Every single part of the wall was wall-to-wall photos of him, all framed. There had to be 100 of them, 200 of them. You couldn't even see the wall. And it was every movie he was ever in, because I think he played a bad guy in the Western movies.
Right.
And so we sat and talked to him for quite a while and visited with Kenny Duncan. And like I said, I met a couple of the people that were in Plan 9, but it was just a hello, how are you? It wasn't any time spent with them or anything like that, because everything seemed to happen so quick.
You met Vampira also, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I met
her.
I couldn't get over how tiny her waist was. Oh, my gosh. That woman had to have an 18-inch waist. I've never seen anything like it.
Mm.
She was real pretty. Mm-hmm. She was very pretty.
Did you get to meet
and
Tor Johnson?
She was very sweet. No, I didn't get to meet Tor. Mm-mm. No, and
I
you know what?
You said...
My dad was typing stuff for somebody that was running for public office. And I remember sitting in the house with him, and I'd be watching a movie on TV, and he'd be on the typewriter. And he could, that, my father could type 200 words a minute. And his spelling was accurate. He never misspelled a word. And he would type up this stuff for this congressman, and then we'd go to the post office, and he'd have them in manila envelopes, and he'd mail them off.
I think the guy's name was Sam Yorty.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Yeah, but
yeah,
I remember well.
Yeah, I've read that he used to write campaign speeches for him.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
I remember that really, really well.
And that part about the typing, he won some competition in New York when he was up there or something in Poughkeepsie, I think.
Yeah,
as the fastest typist. Yeah, and they said you never had to retype anything. Said no spelling errors, anything. That he could just knock it out.
He could have been a court recorder. I mean, he was just brilliant on a typewriter. And even these letters I'm reading that I have that he gave me to my mother, that's probably going to be another time when we're online with you. I'm trying to decipher them because my eyes aren't as good as they used to be. I have to use the magnifying glass. I have to have surgery. Mm-hmm. But he writes so well, and it shows character in his writing. And, gosh, I wish I could write like that.
So
and it's a letter to my mother from when he was in New York, and it was August 19, 1945, and it's on military paper with a Marine insignia on it.
Oh, wow.
And it's eight pages long. And I've been sitting here with a magnifying glass deciphering, because some of his writing is hard. I think now I know why he typed. Because some of his writing is hard to read, but I can kind of make it out if I keep going over it and over it. I can kind of tell what he's trying to say. And some of it is very descriptive and clever how he's writing it.
I've always said don't ever screw with a writer because they'll describe you. So, that's about right. Miss Kathleen, if we don't mind me asking, going off of what Greg Bowe was speaking on earlier, when it comes down to the filmmaking and how much, unlike today, where you do have the advantage of digital filming and green screens and everything like that, I go back, and this is way back, the silent movies, to the old Nosferatu movie, the first vampire movie. And when you watch that, it's a silent movie, it's black and white, but what makes it so creepy of a movie, and unlike the movies today where they just gore you to death and it's that kind of shock therapy with a boom, you know, this right here, it was all about the lighting. It was all about the movement.
Yep.
It was all about
the
reaction and everything. How
a gothic
I can only imagine how much agonizing Mr. Wood put into his films because he was trying to tell the story through the film and not through the effects, if you understand my meaning on that. And that's where the Twilight Zone and Hitchcock has always had me on a hook, is the fact that it's not about the effects. It's not about the actors. It's about the story in itself. And you didn't have to have Elizabeth Taylor and every one of them. You could have anybody, because it was all the way, well, what was it, The Birds, Tippi Hedren, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that's one of my favorites. Right. Yeah.
When you're seeing her in that film, that's her actual reaction to that. So, you know, when Mr. Wood was putting together his films, I can only imagine how much thought he's had to put into things to try to convey the story with what he had to work with.
Well, I like the part two in Plan 9 where the gravesite is sinking in. Do you remember that? Where Vampira's walking and she's going past the tree, and then you look down on the ground where the grave is, and it's kind of funny because I think the headstone fell over.
Oh, wow. A little awkward there, right?
Yeah, there's always what they call it, a blooper in a movie. But the ground was opening up, and it just really caught my attention, like, okay, how did they do that? How did they get the dirt to move on that, where that body's under the ground there? How did Ed get them to make that dirt fall into that hole? They didn't have special effects and computers. And so that really caught my attention when I was watching it.
And the amount of thought. Yeah, the amount of planning
ahead.
And thought that had to go into that.
Yeah, really.
Marvel at.
You were talking about Nosferatu. The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari is a great one.
Yes.
The use of angles, the shadows,
yes, sir.
Is just, they cannot reproduce that now for some reason. They cannot.
No.
The old Twilight Zones.
The black
yes,
and white
sir.
Ones, the early ones.
I mean, the Golem, all these silent movies that, I mean, just use angles of shadows of light, you know, the lighting just, it's just, they don't make movies like that anymore. That's why I like the old Universal horror films, the Dracula,
right.
the Frankenstein. It's just got so much
oh,
atmosphere.
Yeah.
And now they're trying to redo them, and they're flopping. I mean, this
big time.
Yeah, this mummy movie with Tom Cruise, I mean, I don't even think I'll watch it on free TV from what I've heard.
It's not a horror movie. It's an action movie, and they can't get. And see, this is something. Like I said, when I was teaching that class, and I was talking to, I used a line from the film where Johnny Depp as Ed Wood is sitting there, and he's talking, and he's describing his love. He was basically giving a soliloquy about his love, basically a verbal love letter to the old 1930s horror films of Dracula and the Wolfman and Frankenstein. And he described them, I think, best in that film by saying that they were a gothic poetry, dark gothic poetry,
good.
And that's what they were.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Because, I mean, even like in Bride of Frankenstein, when you see the monster going into the woods and they have created the trees to look like almost like light poles, real dark and bare trees. I mean, you just can't beat that scene.
No, absolutely not. When I was in kindergarten, they showed us the, here I am, 5-year-old kid in Chicago. They played, it was Halloween, they played Creature from the Black Lagoon. For all of us kindergarten, right?
I remember that. Okay.
One of my favorites.
And that,
one of my favorites.
Yeah, and that scene when the creature comes up out of the swamp, you know. So that night I go home, 5-year-old kid. Mom tells me and my brother, all right, time to get in the bathtub, guys. And I said, that kid's showering tonight, mom.
Right?
Nah, we're not bathing anymore. Nah, babe. But
hey,
you know,
were talking about the Wizard of Oz. Did you know when I was 8 years old, I got up out of bed and started screaming, and my aunt came in and she goes, what's wrong? And I said, the witch is on my door. She's on my door.
Wow.
That's her. I know that's her. And she had the hat and the green face and the entourage on. And she said, no, honey, there's nobody there. I'd go, but no, that's the witch from the Wizard of Oz, and she's going to get me. I know she's going to get me. And my aunt had to lay down in bed with me till I fell asleep. I really swear to God, I thought that was her. I'm not kidding.
Oh, wow.
Me.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
The Munchkins creeped me out more than the witch did.
Those winged monkeys.
The Munchkin did?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Munchkins.
Yeah.
I mean, they were creepy little dudes. I mean,
yes, they were. Or
the
marching winkies. Especially their singing voice.
The one that talked like this and says, hello, everybody. My name's a Munchkin.
Exactly.
That one was
like a mini Popeye.
The hair on my arm standing up just talking about it.
Yeah.
The coroner.
Right. That was freaky.
It's funny how we all perceive our own things, you know, how we look at things.
Right.
We all have a different opinion. Now, I was freaked out by the witch, and Alan didn't care for the Munchkins, and then somebody was talking about Dorothy, so here we go.
Dorothy, yeah.
But what's sad about the whole thing is that I admit this on, you know, for the whole world to hear that the Creature from the Black Lagoon kind of got me out of the bathtub phase as a child. My son, on the other hand, I have a habit, you know, being a big military background, of watching Saving Private Ryan on Memorial Day. To me, it's one of them things. And
good movie.
So, so I go to sit down, and of course, Rob was probably about 7-8 years old, and I've got it on, and let's face it, I've got to get to watch this movie. I've seen it a million times, but I got to watch it a million and one, you know? And he's playing with his toys there in the living room and everything. And I finally said, okay, time for one of those dad, son and dad moments. I says, all right, look, big man, I says, there's going to be a lot of stuff that goes on in this movie right here, and I don't want you to get upset if you see things. Let me know if there's anything that bothers you, and I'll try to, you know, explain everything I can to you. But whatever you do, don't get upset because, you know, dad's here to talk to you about it. You know, being the big dad thing, you know what I mean? Going for the Father of the Year award. Well, he's sitting there
hashtag
watching it.
Dad.
About 10 minutes into it, he's like, hey, dad, can you make me a bowl of ravioli? I'm like, oh, are you even absorbing any of this? You know what I mean? So to a certain extent, these kids now, I embrace the fact that I dropped a load in my pants on a Halloween night over Jaws when that head rolled out of the boat on Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, yeah.
I cherish the fact that the creature from the Black Lagoon really had
Jaws.
An impact on my bathing. You know what I mean?
I was cheering for Jaws.
The crippler is probably going to kill me for saying this live on the air, but he's scared to death of clowns because he snuck and watched it when he was young.
Yeah,
and he still can't be around clowns.
Yeah, they can
be scary.
I'm not scared
of clowns, but if a clown gets near me, he's on notice. But I mean,
you know what I miss on TV?
I'm not scared of them.
I miss the Crypt Keeper. I miss the Crypt
Keeper.
The Crypt Keeper.
Wow.
I love that thing. I wish they'd bring it back. It was.
They are.
That was one of my all-time favorites.
Mm-hmm.
They're bringing him back.
He was awesome.
They are bringing.
Are they?
They are. They are bringing him back, I heard. I heard that.
That's awesome.
I think it's M. Night Shyamalan. I think M. Night Shyamalan is going to be writing a whole new Tales of the Crypt series with the Crypt Keeper.
I don't know how faithful
it's going to be to the original, but, yeah, it's going to be great.
I can't wait.
Yeah, because those stories were amazing. Like the guy that wouldn't stop smoking cigarettes and they kept burning his fingers off or some weird thing like that. I thought, that's a good way to quit smoking, huh?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So wasn't there one with James Woods and Alan King where Alan King was like a counselor? Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
James Woods. And they open up the window and his wife is in some electric chamber and they're shocking his wife or something like that, you know?
Yeah,
yes,
for drinking.
Was that cat eye? Cat eye or something
That was cat's eye. You're right. Yeah.
That's right. That's what that was. Yep.
Yeah.
Because it had like four or five different stories and each story was thrown together by the same cat. Like the cat got out of the house in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And was constantly
in the
middle.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad I brought that up because those were amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's
too
bad my dad.
That was the unfortunate thing about. Go ahead, ma'am. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. It's just too bad my dad wasn't able to bring it more forward as he got a little older, you know, because I know he was so great at what he did. I think if he would have had more help from people, it might have made a difference, but. You know how that business is. It's kind of dog eat dog anyway.
Right.
But I think he could have gone a long way.
And I believe there's so many people nowadays down through. And wouldn't he be amazed, though, now at all the generations that have come after him of filmmakers and writers and artists who would, if they had the chance, would just kill for the opportunity to have been able to work with him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you because I've met a couple people from New York, friends of mine, that are script writers and producers that I've been dealing with. And they're into the small films now, like Ed did. They don't have those large budgets, you know, millions of dollars to go out there and make an expensive film and pay the high wages that actors want. But they're coming forward, and they're doing documentaries, and they're doing personal stories. and they're doing them just like Ed did, where it's not going to cost them a fortune. And they're becoming more popular. And these are this is the younger generation that's doing it. And it's good to see this. I'm glad it's happening.
I would have had a big influence
on that.
I would have loved the opportunity to be able to do a comic book with him. I mean, I think that would have been tremendous.
I mean, look at what David Lynch did before he became famous. He done Eraserhead for nearly nothing, and that's a cult classic now.
Right.
That's true.
So, a lot of people think a lot more of Eraserhead than they do of a lot of his more recent films where he had a budget. So sometimes it's not all about the money that goes into it.
Yeah, that's true, Alan. Yeah.
Right.
I think it's more primal. It's more primal when you don't have the budget. I think, you know, a creative person, if you sit a creative person down and says, you have everything here, you can, anything you need, all the money you want, anything else. But I think when there's certain constraints and you have to work inside, you have to be, it gives you a chance to be even more creative, I think.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Yeah. We were talking about that a couple of weeks ago with Vaughn, were we not? When it comes down to the grassroots stuff, and you've got, what did I say, crawl through that mile of broken glass to get to where you want to be. When you're given everything, it robs, and that's what's one of the things I cherish about me with all the bad things I've gone through with writing books is the fact that when I do reach that point and I am sitting there and I am looking down on my writing career and I go, you know what? Got a lot of scars and I earned every darn one of them and, you know, so be it. You know what I mean? I would rather have it that way than just be, hey, this kid looks good. He can write halfway decent. Let's go ahead and slide him a seven-figure contract, and he can just write about pudding. I would rather be that guy who had the struggle, you know what I mean, and go up against it like Mr. Wood did. And I don't know. To me, it just seems like the effort's more genuine then, you know.
Well, don't you guys think really that Ed Wood is kind of a rallying cry for all of the creatives that have the creative soul and go through the trials and tribulations to try to use our imaginations and get our ideas out? And basically we want to tell a story to the public. We want to tell our story. And I think Ed Wood is just like the penultimate example of that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think for all of us.
You know, it seems like almost money, having that big budget and all that, tends to make people lazy.
Exactly.
If you don't have that big budget, then you have to be creative.
You have to work for it. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you have to work harder than you do if you've got that big budget because you really don't have to work that hard because you can CGI or whatever, and you can just take shortcuts.
Yep.
I agree.
And you
what they did Cleopatra with millions of dollars, and it was a flop, the movie Cleopatra.
Yeah.
Overkill.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
It was insane, but I didn't enjoy it. It was too much. It was like, he put so much money into that production for Liz Taylor, and it was awful in my mind. It just didn't work.
What that whole movie was missing, and I called that a movie, not a film, it was missing was the story. It had the flash. It had the A-list actress. It had the big
splits.
Noise and the effects and all that kind of jet were the effects for that time, at least ways. And the color and the costumes and all that. But what it was lacking was a tale.
Yeah.
It's like painting a wall a pretty color and watching it dry, you know?
Well, it's like the Days of Wine and Roses. You know, that's a brilliant film.
Absolutely.
It's got so much substance to it and heartfelt movie or film. It's a brilliant, brilliant film. Days of Wine and Roses. And to find writers like that, I mean, it's brilliant to find them. And it's, they're harder to find these days, but maybe they'll have a comeback. Like we were talking about, they're doing shorter films now. They're not as expensive. So it is making the younger people use their imagination more.
Well, and I think the birth of the Internet, too, because, you know, the Internet allows – I can only imagine what your father would have done in the days that had he had access to publish through the Internet. Nowadays, a writer can write a book. An artist can do, images and upload them. Anybody in their prospective fields can put their – abilities online for the world to see and get a following and get discovered. Or, you know, nowadays there's a lot of people that are out there that don't even need the big studios anymore. They don't have to go around shuffling around for a publisher or a producer or distributor. They can basically be publisher, promoter, distributor themselves online. There's no telling what your father would have done.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It's a whole different way of using your imagination. And it's a good thing, I think, because technology is moving on and people are putting it to good use. And as long as you don't get stuck in a rut if you're on a computer.
Yeah.
But if,
not that any of us ever felt that, yeah.
That's true.
And Ms. Kathleen, I wanted to share with you an experience of a friend of mine, Mike Roberts, who is the director and writer of Vaughn. And, you know, I hung out with him yesterday for about an hour. We got to talk about how the filming's going and everything because he's finishing the last five episodes to hit so that he can hit Netflix and Hulu. And like your dad, he's on a budget. And he's trying to find locations. He's trying to do everything he can. He's using all of the creative power that he has, just like your dad. And I've got to say that as we've been talking tonight, you know, I've got four of the smartest people that I know. I've got Greg Bowe. I've got Papastro Maestro. I've got Dave Atwell. And I've got Alan Braswell. I've got four very smart friends of mine. And we are here, we're excited about what your father has done. Your father has generated, so far, 90 minutes of great content, great discussion about how he did things and how what he did has left an indelible imprint on what we do today. And, you know, and I can't thank you enough. No, we're not in conclusion here. I'm just saying we can't thank you enough for being here and sharing this with us because it gets everyone's creative juices flowing. Am I okay?
Yeah,
say that well. Yep. Am I correct? Yeah, Greg Bowe, am
I
correct?
Man.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Papastro, it gets your creative juices flowing, right?
Oh, no doubt. It's amazing. It's just such an amazing.
And Alan, and you know, thank you for introducing me because to Ms. Kathleen, because this is what we want. This is what we like Comic-Con stars to be. We like for good, smart people to reflect on the topic. And Ms. Kathleen, your dad was a genius. He did what no one else could do, and we all appreciate what he did. I'm sorry, I just had to tell you that. Is that okay?
Aww, yeah, make me.
Well, you echoed. Yeah, I think you echoed John perfectly, exactly, and captured how I think we all feel.
All jokes aside,
I mean, if there's some kid right now listening, and I use the term kid, anything below 30 is a kid to me these days. listening, there goes another
and
old
anything
joke.
Anything over 80, everything over 80,
oh.
too.
Oh,
you know,
if
Ed was with us right now, I'm sure we all would agree. We would just go up to him and say, you know, thank you so much for everything,
absolutely.
Everything with the film industry
but
and
the,
what you've done and
the thing
how
is,
you set
though,
the pace, set the bar for all of us today. You know.
Yep. And if some 19, 20-year-old, 16-year-old kids out there listening to this tonight. And then goes back to YouTube or even just Googles Ed Wood, mission accomplished. You know what I mean? Because
exactly.
that's the kind of stuff that, and going back to the, if there's one good thing that has come out of the internet, it's the fact that my son can listen to Johnny Cash whenever he wants.
Right.
He can go back and watch Frankenstein whenever he wants. And, you know, for these young folks out there that got a story in mind, that have a knack for something, man, put your arms around it. It don't work for Walmart all your life. Put your arms around it. Keep your lights on. Very important to keep lights on. But do not be me, the guy who waited till he was 45 years old to get on the train. You know what I mean? Get out there, pay the dues, and look at the suffering. Look at the hard times that these pioneers, you know, went through, you know, to get to where they were at. And look how much, and again, there we go, the mile of broken glass. How much they had, maybe it was more than a mile of broken glass that they had to get through. And not only that, but back in those days, when somebody said you stunk, everybody said you stunk. It wasn't one of those things where it was, and going back to the social aspects of homosexuality and transgender and all that kind of jazz, you know, once you were labeled back in those days, that was pretty much the end of the road. Yeah, whereas nowadays you still have those people out there that'll stand up and go, hold on now, you know, this guy's all right. And
that's exactly right.
So, you know, if you're a youngster out there listening to this, hey, don't be scared. Look up the names, check out, and embrace their pain, and embrace their sacrifice they made to the arts. You know what I mean? And the arts, drawing, filmmaking, singing, writing, whatever, embrace it and take their sacrifice and pick it up and run, folks, run with it.
Yeah, everybody's got a talent. You know, I told Alan that too, because I make jewelry and I actually make it out of paper. And I have to use my imagination when I do this. And I've sold a lot
of
it. And it took me hours and a long time to put the way I wanted it. And it came out pretty damn good. And Alan has bought several pieces from me.
Oh, yeah. Miss Kathleen's my Walmart. anytime it's time for my wife's, if it's her anniversary or birthday, I just call Miss Kathleen, okay, what you got? And she'll tell me, I've got this bracelet, I've got this necklace, and shoot me pictures, and I'll say, okay, I'll take that. So
nice.
She's become my Walmart for the last 6 years.
Yeah, it's been, and I've met people in New York and a famous artist in London, Stephen Whately, and he's an Ed Wood. He's charcoaled him and painted him and done tributes to Ed Wood, and he's an amazing person. And so your art is your life, and Alan has recently found his talent in art, and Teddy has his son. And I told an artist one time, I said, oh, I can't do that, that's crazy. And she said, you know what, you can do anything you want to do in the art field, you just have to find out what your art is and work at it.
That's right.
So you hit the nail on the head. It's true. Everyone has a talent. It's hidden there somewhere, and you've just got to find it.
Yep, that Viking bracelet you made for me, you'd never made one before, but you made it for me, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and it was a lot of work, and I had blisters on my thumbs, let me tell you. But I worked. I did.
It's a beautiful piece.
It's a gorgeous piece.
It's a beautiful piece.
Well, now I know who to call when it's time for Blondie's birthday.
Yeah, I've got an anniversary coming up myself, yeah.
I know, that's why we're all quiet sitting here doing have the same fault.
But everybody's got a talent. Everyone's got an art form of some sort. And Alan's painting these beautiful characters, you know. And it makes me feel good to know that so many people have found their talent. And it makes you use your imagination. And it's a wonderful thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Like
and the most debilitating word in the entire English language is can't.
Oh, boy.
You know?
Yes.
Well, Henry Ford, there's two men. One says I can, the other one says I can't, and both of them are absolutely correct. The minute you say I can't, game over.
Okay.
As long as you say I can, it's going to happen.
Oh, sure.
You know?
I agree. Yeah.
You're 100% right.
I tell you what.
And you, Miss Kathleen.
This is,
yes, Dave.
No, I was just going to say, you know, and not to just said we were going up against okay. All right. Okay, we can do this. We carry this. We got this. We got this. I'm here to tell you, I think this show can go for three. I
oh,
mean,
yeah.
Awesome job tonight. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Absolutely.
It really has. And I think, Ms. Kathleen, your father has generated so much great energy tonight that may we ask you back. Would you come back and see us in about a month?
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah.
Well,
I think it'd be fun. I'll get hold of Jennifer, too, and I want to watch those other films, too. And
well,
I've got the whole collection.
Miss
like.
Kathleen,
I would
say it's a pleasure having you on the show tonight. It's
absolutely.
Such an honor and
yeah,
a pleasure.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
I enjoyed it. And you guys were all wonderful and smart and highly intelligent. And I learned a lot tonight just from listening to you, too. You know, we can always grow. I might be 71 years old, but I'm still learning, you know. You never stop learning.
That's
and
right.
You take
Amen.
That's right.
Amen.
Amen.
Absolutely.
Well,
all right. Well, here's
one
what
thing
I'm
I can say.
Yeah. Pardon me, Alan.
But one thing I want to say about Miss Kathleen, it started out 6 or so years ago as I just wanted to talk to Edward's daughter. But then this amazing friendship grew, and she's just so classy and such a kind person and so good to talk to. She's really a quality human being. And I think
well,
that's,
thank you, Alan. That's very nice. Thank you so much.
Well, we count you
not.
As – and I think you've done a great job tonight, and it's really been fun.
Oh, I enjoyed it thoroughly. I was really excited. I was looking forward to it. I couldn't wait. I kept looking at the clock going, half an hour and 20 minutes. I'm supposed to get a phone call. 5 minutes and we're on. So I was
at least
so
you knew
excited.
What day of the week it was, right? Unlike other folks out there.
Yeah, Dave.
Yeah.
Miss Kathleen,
I must have slept
about
through
this.
Last night.
I felt like such a bonehead. I was like, man, Dave, way to go, buddy. If there's ever
and
time for here. Time travel, it's now. You know, to go back about 5 minutes ago and just not post that, you know. Come on, man.
Dave,
up your game.
Dave, don't worry. I didn't make fun of you or anything.
No, of course not. I appreciate that.
I want to hear more about Dorothy. Come on now.
All right,
Papa Stro. We need one more recap on Dorothy now. Let's Miss Kathleen.
Oh, yeah, Dorothy. She actually has her own Facebook. If you go to Papa's Dorothy, you see all the extravagant pictures of Dorothy and her adventures. And, of course, you can go to my YouTube channel, Stro Maestro, and see all the Boris Karloff like black and white videos that we do together.
Miss Kathleen,
you know, the
we'll
odd thing about Dorothy
links,
though
okay?
is that she's incredibly light for her size, so I marvel at her nutritional plan. It was just here recently at the, there we go again, another old age moment. Steampunk in Atlantic. Jeez Louise, yes, man, I have really got to start that. What is that? Not eucalyptus, echinacea. That's what I need. I actually had the slash pleasure of holding on to Dorothy for a moment, and I marveled at her lack of weight. But after I set her back down, I kind of stopped and looked at her, and I says, I know what you're up to, chick, because you're light because you have no mass. Because, like, you're on this astral plane thing. I know what you're doing, and I know you're looking at me, and I know I'm looking at you, and I know I'm looking at you. You just stay in that chair right there, young lady.
It's funny. I take Dorothy to all these Comic-Cons, right? I take her to these Comic-Cons, and these people, these cosplayers are dressed up as these scary characters and personas, right? And you have people dressed up as aliens and Spawns and Batmans and Harlequins and all that. They're all running from Dorothy. They're terrified of her. Little Dorothy is like the scariest thing in the whole Comic-Con. It's hysterical.
Stro, you weren't sitting too far from me one time at a Comic-Con, and you should have seen it. It was funny. I had to explain Dorothy to Misty. She was like, what has Stro got over? And I said, oh, Lord. Here we go.
You know, all jokes aside, my mother-in-law, God rest her soul, my mother-in-law, I'm one of the few guys on the planet that ever told his wife, you know, if you acted more like your mother, you wouldn't have these problems. I dearly love my mother-in-law. And I lost her in 2009. And still to this day, I miss her. Well, she was a little Okinawan lady. And her and my wife went over to Japan, or Okinawa, to go see family. Well, when they came back, my mother-in-law had brought my daughter Lisa a clown. It was like a porcelain Japanese clown. And, I mean, this thing was like high-end porcelain clown. So what Mom did when she was overseas, whatever she bought for us, she put in a box and sent to us so she didn't have to fly with it. Except for that set of swords that she put in her luggage, and she got stopped. That's a whole nother story, which is hilarious. But nevertheless, we're opening this stuff up, and I'm like, ah, oh, cool, bottle of sake. I hear you. You know, we're opening them. My wife's got her kimono and everything. And, I mean, we're all looking at this stuff. Well, then we pull this box out, and Lisa opens up the lid to this box, and there's this clown. And everything is like the whole, even the air conditioner just cut off. And we're all staring at this thing. And I looked over at Dale, my wife, and I says, with so many sentence enhancers that I like to use when we're not on the air, this thing will not be gracing any corner of this building. I want you to know that right now. If Lisa wants this, that's fine, but it's going to reside in a closet. The box will be duct taped. And we're not having this in this house. And oddly enough, Lisa grows up, moves out, and we've got a friend of ours who actually did professional clown work on the side part-time, and he was retiring from his regular job, and Dale says, you know, I think I'm going to give Pat that clown. And I looked at her, and I says, you know what, there's a reason why I love you, and it's moments like this, because you're getting that clown the hell out of this house, because any light bulb that's burned out in this house in the last 10 years has been because of it. So when I run out of toothpaste, it's because of that clown. You know what I mean? When the power goes out, it's because of that clown. You know what I mean? So, every time I see Dorothy, I think, okay, Stroh's got that thing roll around the backseat of his car with him. I wonder how many times he looks in that rearview mirror. He goes, you just stay right there. You know what I mean? How many times does he, like, put her in a seatbelt just to make sure she doesn't move around, you know?
Oh, but I know she likes to go on the roads. And she got a little tricycle she rides sometimes. And she'll listen to old 70s music. I mean, she loves disco. I mean, all about the disco.
Papa Stro, my goodness. Oh. Dave Atwell, thank you. Greg Bowe, thank you. Alan Braswell,
gladly.
Thank you. I've got to say that this has been the most enjoyable Comic-Con Stars I have ever moderated. Miss Kathleen, thank you so much
fun.
For being here. Because the spirit of your father has come through you and has created something wonderful, and we want to thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed all your companies. It's wonderful. I look forward to
you know
it
what?
In the future.
You know what's funny is everyone has talked more than you have, and you have generated, you and your father have generated the most wonderful stories, most wonderful content. Everybody's had a great time tonight. I have. It was great. I got to listen to everything. It's been fun. So first of all, will you come back and talk to us in about a month? Is that okay?
Yeah, that sounds great. I enjoyed it. And Jennifer will be great, too, my daughter.
Awesome.
Yeah, you really enjoyed her, too.
We'll have a great time. I know Papa Stro will be back. Dave will be back. Greg Bowe, will you be one of our co-hosts that night?
I would not miss it.
What we ought to do, though, is have, like, movie night. We all need to kind of pledge to getting on the stick and brushing up on our Ed Wood films. So
yeah,
that
I
way,
will. I promise.
Well,
yeah, and then
we
I'm
will
on
look
board.
Before
and
know we'll
Dave,
work that out.
We'll know what day it is.
we'll work it out.
Yeah.
And we'll make
I'll be
it
on
happen,
there Wednesday night, way ahead of you guys.
Where is everybody?
Oh, my goodness. You're as bad as I am, Dave. Look, thank you so
yeah,
much.
I'll be dialing in Wednesday night going, where is everybody?
Okay.
Dorothy, is that you?
The lights are on and yeah. Nobody's home.
That's it. Welcome to my world.
That's right. So first of all, thanks to our co-hosts. And, of course, thank you, Miss Kathleen. It has been enjoyable. We've had a great time. We want you back.
Ma'am.
And I think everyone realizes that your father has created something that will never end. He was the do-it-yourself guy. He created great films with no budget, and we are so proud to be part of his legacy, every one of us. So thank you so much
Amen.
For being with us.
Thank you.
And thanks so much. So I tell you what. We'll say good night from Comic-Con Stars. We'll see
okay.
you in about a month. I'll talk with
Sounds
you and
good.
Jennifer. And again, thanks, Alan, for bringing one of your friends here to us. We've had a great time. So thanks.
No
VOC
problem.
VOC Nation has been wonderful. They promoted this for an entire week. We've had a lot of people that have been excited about you being on here. So we'll get you back. We'll have fun. And thanks so much. So, ladies and gentlemen,
Aww.
thanks tonight for being with us at Comic-Con Stars, and we'll see you next week. Okay?
All righty.
It's
been a pleasure, ma'am. Thank you.
It has
Thank
been a pleasure,
you.
Miss Kathleen. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Miss Kathleen.
Bye, everybody.
You're all.
Good night,
Bye-bye.
Gang.
Good night.
Good night.
Take care.